Just to recap where we were yesterday.
December 30th, last session of God's Good Earth.
Steve shared with us some of the biblical background for caring for creation, for environmental concern. And I'm still at the point in my journey into understanding environmental issues and integrating it in my faith that when I read through the Bible, as I do year by year, new things jump out at me all the time. And Steve does such a good job of having a synoptic view of Scripture, almost like Tom Wright does, from beginning to end, and seeing how these themes leap out. And I was really glad that he was able to share that with us. And we talked a little bit about our reading of the world and how our faith and our scholarship combine, and how we need to also extend that attention to the world, to others of our brothers and sisters who aren't pursuing environmental sciences or environmental professions. And then Scott shared some of the work that Floresta does, which is just emblematic of the ability to tie together our concern for creation with our mandate to love our neighbors as ourselves, and to do that in a rich way that empowers people to manage their own lives and manage their own environments in much better ways. And we've just learned so much from our manuscript studies together, I think, that ties to caring for creation. And I hope that we'll keep those things in mind as we have our discussions tonight and talk about practical applications and actions. How do those things fit with what our vision that we've gained from Paul about what the church should be doing, and how the cosmic significance of the reconciliation plays into our lives. So we'll think about those things and keep them in mind. And then we just can't be thankful enough, from the perspective of our track, for having Tom Wright teaching us daily, as if he could be in here leading this track in particular. I think all of us probably feel that. But the themes that he highlights are of so much salience to the work that we do and the way we look at the world. So we're really thankful for that. Let me start with a word of prayer for our last session together. Almighty God, you are gracious to us far beyond what we could ever invent or dream or imagine or program. You work things together at conferences like these and in our lives and circumstances to bring great good and to show us your grace and your mercy and your knowledge and your wisdom. We pray that you would continue to do that in our final discussion tonight, that you would enable us to learn from each other and to grow to love each other more. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
We're going to start off with a small group exercise, an opportunity to kind of talk about how we can put some of these ideas into action. So we have a few questions for you. We learned from the first night and wrote them down so that they'd be a little easier to reference. But what I'd like you to do is get in your groups of three or four and talk about one action that either individuals or small groups or whole churches could do or could undertake to care for God's creation that either inspires the rest of the church or your church to be more faithful and creative in its stewardship responsibilities, or which portrays a biblical, winsome, and surprising witness to the world at large. And as the question says, you know, these are actions that can be at home, in the workplace, at school, or in the church. You know, don't limit your imagination. In fact, I think this is an area where we have a tremendous opportunity for creativity. And I think that you're going to be sharing some creative ideas later, but we're looking for you and actually hoping that we can glean some exciting and creative ideas from your work. And then adding my own particular concern to it, what are actions that explicitly link caring for creation close at home to our need to be a voice for the voiceless, to be Hortons, and to empower our brothers and sisters around the world? And what resources would need to be found or created in order to catalyze that action? So why don't you go ahead and get in your groups, and we'll take, 15 minutes?
Yeah, I'll just say, I get the question all the time. Folks will take me aside, knowing that I'm involved in creation care ministry, and it almost as if confessing to a murder will say, you know, we just started recycling in my house. Or, you know, I just discovered that I need to turn off the water when I'm brushing my teeth. What else should I do? And they expect a list, and they expect a code to live by, and they expect that it would start with change your light bulbs. And we're looking for something that is more exciting and more creative and more engaging than that. Although we don't want to leave changing the light bulbs undone. So please, you know, as you're thinking and being creative, look for things that will surprise people and refresh them as they encounter trepidatiously, you know, this new way of thinking about the world. So think in small groups, then we'll come back and report some of the ideas that came out. I want to call us back together and show you a funky little video that a friend of mine did.
Lead has the worst traffic in the nation. Most people just complain about it, but we decided to do something about it. We chose to celebrate the people that use mass transportation in this city every day. This is my neighborhood, East Atlanta Village. And this is the busiest bus stop.
No, a friend of mine.
We're going to celebrate the people who use this bus stop by giving them a bench and making this stop the most beautiful place in the city.
I've got some sketches here that I worked on, and the whole goal here is to celebrate mass transit. Bench monster.
Goofy project, but they were bold enough to put it on their web, and there's like 20 other bus stops in America now where folks have taken responsibility for their neighborhood and done something good for it. That's the kind of ideas that I think we need to be generating as the church, things that surprise folks and that don't look like changing your light bulbs, recycle more, consume less. I mean, those are things we need to get to in terms of messages. But we need to find new angles in. So I wonder what some ideas that you guys came up with were, and you know, throw them out there and be humble enough that maybe we can work on them together. And you've probably already done that in your small groups and honed and thought and butted off new ideas. So who wants to start culture changing projects or places to start, easy access points for people who want to think about caring for creation?
Yeah, I was sharing urban Philadelphia. My neighborhood does have some trees and some green space, although not very much. Some neighborhoods in Philadelphia really have none at all to speak of. But I decided that I wanted to build a little garden in my small yard. And originally I had intended to put it in the backyard. But when I moved in, I realized that the backyard was totally shady and that wasn't going to work at all. So I had to build it in the front yard, which I was a little bit nervous about at first, and it required much ripping out of ivy. But I built a little box, 4 feet by 8 feet. It fits perfectly in the front yard, which is not much bigger than that. And filled it with dirt and put some little seeds in it. And I got, I met so many people who have been just walking by the street while I was creating it, while I'm outside watering the plants. And almost without exception, people will stop and say, I love your garden. What do you have growing in it? And so I'll point out the different plants and sort of, I don't know, say something about how this is a new adventure for me and it's kind of fun and I'm learning a lot. And but it's been really great. And people I've met, neighbors on the street as well as people that just walk down my street on their way to and from work or school. But I think that that is a great project on many different levels. Because it, as Per was saying, it connects us with nature, that we have to think about, well, do I need to water today? Did it rain? Are they getting enough sun? I need to pull up, oh, there's a little thing sprouting that I didn't plant. I guess I need to pull those out in a way that you don't, especially people that have lived in the city their whole lives, don't often think about. It also brings a measure of order to our neighborhood, which is very disordered in many ways, as evidenced in one way by a lot of litter that's on the street. And people don't really care that much about just the way that it looks, or it's not important to people. But just by taking care of this little 4 by 8 foot plot, sets an example, and is pretty radical in a lot of ways for people who just never considered that to be part of what you can do.
It's pretty amazing how you mingling your labor with the soil inspires people's curiosity and makes them talk when they wouldn't be talking before. So it's building community. It's good for you. It's good for the planet. But it also just is increasing neighborliness. And I think that's a big thing that all of our projects need to do, is to increase our connections with the other people around us. Any other gardening kinds of projects?
We're also talking about just when you feel something like that, there's always a beauty of nature that you always are attracted to. You saw it in their video too, you know, the comments from the people they interviewed, you know, and it's a way that, you know, reflecting God's learning of nation.
Yeah, and it's not wilderness. It's
a the important point about order, you know.
Yes, yeah.
A lot of times people think of, you know, environmentalism, you know, new things wild. And stuff.
Yeah, right.
So building on that idea, if you're in a church in, say, some urban area or something like that, you probably have a lawn, which is kind of a best place to plant. So turn that into a garden, but have it be vegetables that you can donate to the local food pantry or something. You have to be there, take care of the system, but that stuff.
Yeah, so what Tri Robinson's Church in Boise, Idaho does is have folks that are involved in their recovery programs and ministries involved in taking care of the organic garden, which is on the church grounds, which then supplies food for the church's homeless ministries and food bank, and also supplies other local food ministries in town. It's a beautiful way of wrapping together all of those different ministries, and again, building community in the process.
That's what I was going to challenge you to do with picking up ornamentals next year, and vegetables. I remember that the day my husband came home from work, and we only had some in the front yard, and I woke up the front yard and made a vegetable garden, and so he came home from visiting then give 10% of what you grow to.
And God, in His sovereignty, shaded your backyard so that you had to live life in the front yard. And that's one of the things that so many of us need to cultivate is, you know, doing our barbecuing out front, doing our playing out front, letting the back go wild and become wildlife habitat, bird sanctuary, and living out front would be a great thing to start to do. Yeah. Other ideas? Steve?
I think the comment, I like the creativity of this, and I think the eye-catching nature, and I think part of what we're doing here, you know, sort of all of us know, insulate your house, turn off the water, put the light off, and you don't need it, this type of thing. But the good garden project that I had, which was also in the front yard, was a fun one, but it was striking that I was in also in the city, and in a family from Bob, and not the child, but the parents said, are those really
That's great.
Know that in fact, you go online and you're sitting in bed and one's green, and I said, yes, those are pretty tomatoes. And the child was already in the process of picking one of the tomatoes. And the parent wanted to make sure it wasn't something toxic or something strange. And so he did. Okay. Keep popping his mouth. That was good. But I think that we, yes, we want to raise the bar. We want to be more creative. We want to be more advanced. We want to be more wonderful things. We want to look into the future of doing far, far more efficient and more sustainable things. But at the same time, we have to recognize that in many cases, we're at a very unusual stage where people simply have to. If someone simply learns from your front yard that plant grows a little bit, eventually it's a flower, and the flower eventually turns into a fruit, and the fruit is eventually to the point that you can actually eat it, that's a good learning process. And surprisingly, most people don't do that. And so, you know, and the same thing we were talking about in geology, solar farms, and like that, lots of people learn to know that that's something you can do. So, I think we
got to
work at the bottom as well as at the top.
Good.
One thing that a Vista volunteer did in one of the neighborhoods that I lived in Grand Rapids was to run a small service for children in planting literally, I think, a 10 by 10 plot with the kids. That good. The kids do the work supervising it. Just growing the ingredients for salsa. And then at the end of the year, harvesting and having the kids help can salsa from what they had grown. And you know, given the nature of kids in that neighborhood, it was incredible to see the fact that they actually came each day to check out how their garden was doing.
Awesome. Well, square foot gardens are the most efficient gardens that you could possibly have if you're mixing your own labor with it, far more efficient than large-scale agriculture. There's a great book called Square Foot Gardening that'll get you started in all sorts of vegetable, high-productivity gardening on a very, very small scale. Any non-gardening projects that came up? I mean, gardening we can riff on for a long time. It's just beautiful.
One we talked a little bit about was solar power. Having the church made a statement by doing solar power, now it's much more expensive for the cost than solar garden. If you wanted to go the route of the bus stop, you can paint a big red sign on the front of your church, or a big red arrow on the front of your church pointing up saying we care about creation or something. But in certain areas, in the long term, it would be beneficial to the church too, but it would also be probably a way out of state.
A lot of really innovative business arrangements where folks provide the capital up front to put solar panels on a church, and because they basically own the panels, they can get tax breaks that wouldn't mean anything to a church that doesn't pay taxes. So there's great partnerships that are available. This DVD that I showed you one segment of, the Mountaintop Renewable Mining, this comes from a DVD called Renewal. You go to Renewal Online. I'll put the reference to this in an email that I'll send to folks. Has a solarization project that a church did, and they wanted some of the best advertising they could possibly do to have solar panels on the side of the church, on the roof of the church.
I'm thinking of the theme of the church building, church structure,
as I've heard the experiences of people in this room, a lot of architects, a lot of engineers, thought about where I'm at right now. I'm currently reading Earth Sheltered Housing, I wrote a fun book. I would really love to see some radical church buildings, whether Earth Sheltered or other things that are culturally appropriate and places a little less hippie than Bellingham where I grew up. I think there's a tremendous amount of room. If we look at the history, it's very clear for the church structure to be this part of this 4,500 year, or at least a habitat for us as worshipers to dwell in while we are reflecting the glory of creation to God and the glory of God within creation. I really think there's a pressing need.
So that's more than just doing a LEED certified church, which is perfectly standard, but has all sorts of energy efficiency measures built into it and is built in sustainable fashion. Just monkey with the whole DNA of the church building itself to be a witness. That sounds great.
So like these church buildings, like I'm thinking suburban mega church or large church, is it like the wasted period of church building design, like the rectangular box? Seems to be the kind.
Yeah, Church Solutions magazine showed a bunch of pictures of churches to people and asked them which kind of church would they like to attend, and the ones that are most commonly built are the least attractive to anybody when they're picking out what kind of church they'd like to go to. And if architecture and beauty and aesthetics mean anything to the world, it's something we should be thinking about.
Yeah, it used to be so beautiful.
What about projects or ideas that connect local to global issues or that highlight what's going on in the rest of the world? Any projects that touched on some of those things? Okay.
I have a quite personal one. I was talking with Scott over in lunch about it. And that is, I'm really hoping to find a PhD topic that is of critical importance to the academic community and also critical importance to an NGO working in the developing world. So that it is applied and also interesting in terms of funding.
All right, we'll consider that a call for proposals.
Yes.
Many of you have probably done, what we've done the last few years is to give, as Christmas gifts, money to Hacker International or the organization or to others, instead of ordinary gifts, to give them in somebody's name, something like an animal.
The Advent Conspiracy is a great project of started off as a handful of churches and now an increasing number of churches radicalizing what it means to do Christmas as a whole church. So it's not just families deciding, oh, we're going to come back this year and have a really simple Christmas, but it's whole churches spurring each other on to love and good deeds, to worship the baby, resist the empire, love everyone, and to do good in the world, and to use what money is saved to see good things happen in the world. So I recommend Advent Conspiracy as one of the places to think about those sorts of things.
So a lot of what we've been talking about is it's global, which is very important and good, but I think the church also needs to flex its muscle to advocate for policy changes. If they certainly advocate for policy changes in other areas, I think this should be one of them. It's not something that the church typically, churches I'm familiar with, do. If we talk about our group, that may be a matter of education, educating members of the church what they can actually do.
So we've done some of that with our organization, with the Evangelical Climate Initiative. And it's been very successful as far as it goes. But I'm not sure that there have been a lot of folks whose minds have been changed about the importance of climate. It's folks have grown into that understanding on their own, and they've been willing to exercise a moral voice. But even the leaders that have signed that statement have had very little success motivating their own communities to take action on that issue. It's a real puzzle of how do you get to that point of realizing that these are also concerns worthy of exercising our collective will.
It really means, I think, that people like us are more you than me, because you guys are much more engaged in this, is to have a kind of prophetic voice to the church, to stand up and say that. And even knowing that people sometimes won't hear it. But you guys have been doing this already. I think it's very important.
Yeah, I mean, Scott has written a very powerful column for our Creation Care magazine about climate change called Making Poverty Permanent. it you know, laying out just what impacts of climate change would have on poor populations around the globe, and what our own role then is in creating the problem and helping to solve that problem. Very effective. Yes, Amy.
I was going to say, I don't know how many of you in here are in education, but what I teach at, we require for graduation all of our students to have a cross-cultural experience, and preferably to use this kind of travel experience in a cross-cultural environment. So if you have any influence that way in designing the curriculum, then to write things like that into your curriculum, our nursing students have gone to Haiti, we've gone to Belize, our occupational therapy students have done dolphin therapy in Curacao. I take my students to Belize, Guatemala, Curacao, and Caribbean Islands, Puerto Rico. And they come back having seen the native people and how they live. We have a mission trip to Juarez, Mexico every spring break, and we usually get 40 or 50 students going down in buses. And they spring break, we build a home, or a home in the community, and it's always like less than chapter before it leaves the Juarez mission trip. So the students who participate in these things, they write in their journals about how life is in less developed countries and how rich we are in America, and it's vitally important.
That's great. And I think we need to work more to take the people that are doing short-term missions and help them see with a lens what environments are like, and then what some of the transnational linkages are that create those environments.
Our pre-sense students went 1 year to Jamaica at their vacation art school.
Robin?
Someplace in Jamaica, I'm not sure.
They have theaters, or part of their church, they convert to theaters and put on shows. And so one of them, this wasn't environmental, but they did a really powerful play on Rwanda. And they also had pictures that Rwandan children had displayed in their church foyer. So the idea of using their church as a third space for the community to come in, but then also using arts to educate and to move people, I think can also be very
That whole notion of third space, or third place, is so rich, and the churches can play such a role in creating those kinds of environments where community can be built, and that's just good, whether or not you're doing environmental stuff with it or not. But making environments where people can live together more closely and encounter each other, I think, is going to encourage people to want to live in closer proximity and not solve all of their needs and problems for space privately. So that's a great observation. Andy.
Well, it strikes me that with the economy going the way it is, I was just in Grand Rapids, which is where I grew up, Grand Rapids, Michigan. And my brother just had a house built. Mostly my friends of his were contractors, most of whom are now out of business. It strikes me that in our churches, we have a lot of people with a lot of skills, some of whom may or may not have much in the way of jobs soon. So that's just a suggestion that perhaps things that seemed too grand when the economy was good, construction sorts of project, might be things that can put some of these contractor or laborer folks to work doing good, constructive, skilled things. One which is just sort of a tiny piece that slips into my mind. When we were in Grand Rapids, we lived in a house that was built in 1923. Now I've moved out to Iowa. I work on sustainability projects with students at Iowa State. And one of the things is putting eaves on your home to catch the heat in the winter, or catch the sun in the winter, and keep it out in the summer. Back to our house in Grand Rapids. We had awnings. And that's just a thought of one of those things that we always did in the past.
Right.
We don't do anymore. It's something we seem to have given up for fashion. Shading our windows. What kinds of things can we grow in our churches? We using the folks that are there that may be out of work now or in the near future.
That's good. Think about solving more than one crisis at a time. Thanks for having me. Let's move to a kind of coming up, and I wonder whether there are any, what was it our host called it, poignant moments that you'd like to share, or insights that you feel like you'd really like to share with the group before we close. Scott's going to close this with a reading in just a minute, but are there things that are burning on your heart that you'd like to share, or realizations or commitments that you've come to in the last couple of days? I know I haven't prepped you for it, but.
I had a thought this morning after our manuscript study, and I was passionate about with some Parker's members. But I felt when our group had focused mostly on the passage about whether Paul's challenge to not be taking passes was anti-intellectual, and we are convinced that it is not. In fact, that it calls more. And so I was struggling to apply that to my own discipline. And I realized that often in international relations, which is what I do most recently, most questions seem to boil down to you've got at least two, if not more, sort of competing positions, realist, liberal, Marxist, constructivist, whatever. And these are the accepted schools of thought. And usually you get a question and you think, well, which of these perspectives do I find convincing, compelling, and why? And you sort of choose and then you go from there. But that falling into that is easy, but that is really, I think, this just becoming captive to the philosophies of the world, that to really be an honest Christian political scientist, yeah, I can take the best things from these, but my final position has got to be something that is really radically different than any of these, and it is hard, and it is going to take every ounce of intellectual stamina that I have to create that position. And thankfully, we are not alone in that endeavor. There have been people that have gone before and colleagues to encourage us along the way, but that I just find that it is so easy to just, fall into those patterns of the world. So I was chastened and encouraged, I guess, that the Christian way is even more rigorous, I guess, or there's even more possibility.
Thanks, Jacob. Scott, you want to focus for some?
Yeah, a couple quick thoughts. One is, I you guys may all be aware of this, but there's a growing number of resources in this area. I'm kind of surprised that Rusty didn't make a plug for his magazine, or maybe he didn't, I was sleeping, but he edits a magazine that is just fantastic, a quarterly, that helps think through some of these ideas. I've brought a few things, most of it, like you say, is my stuff, but RBC Ministries has put out some small books, God's Good Earth and Celebrating the Wonder of Creation, and they've got books on celebrating the wonder of water and of trees and so forth, but I didn't have room in my suitcase. But there's a growing list of resources, books. Rusty mentioned Tri Robinson's Church, which has done some really cool stuff. I think they're producing 40,000 pounds of vegetables that they're donating to the local, and fresh produce, not the typical stuff that the local food banks get and the homeless shelters get. So they have found a way to have maybe a triple bottom line. I haven't bothered to count them, but at least a number of impacts on their community. And so I think that this is a journey that we're all on together, and it's kind of an exciting journey, and we can learn and grow from each other. And you know, somebody asked me the other day, so how much is enough? You know, if I change my light bulbs, is that good enough? And the question really took me aback because I never kind of considered it that way. But it occurred to me, and I'm still thinking this through a little bit, but that's a little bit like the question of the, you know, the rich young ruler. I've obeyed all the commands. Is that good enough? And Jesus' answer is, of course, no. To do the next step. And I think that there's no such thing as good enough. But then again, it's not a... This isn't a burden. It's an adventure. It's kind of an exciting opportunity for us to be called out and to be a witness to a world that is frankly worried, scared when they're looking at what's happening to the planet. And we have a tremendous opportunity to witness to people who have never heard from this before. You know, we have for years sent a group to San Diego Earth Day. I think is one of the largest Earth Day festivals in North America, and we've always had a table there, and more people are recognizing it, that they're excited, they're glad we're there, and it's an opportunity for us to talk to people that we would never otherwise get a chance to talk to. They certainly aren't coming to our churches right now. So, how much is enough? I don't know. It's a journey. I don't think there is any enough. I will, as Rusty said, I have a reading. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Paul Brand, Dr. Paul Brand. Anybody? A couple? He absolutely amazing medical doctor, grew up in India, developed a treatment, radically new treatment for leprosy, widely acknowledged in both medical circles and in Christian circles, wrote a couple of books together with Philip Yancey, Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, and I think, what was the other one? Something on pain, The Gift of Pain. Amazing man. I had the privilege of meeting him a couple years before he died, but he wrote an essay which has appeared, it actually forms the bulk of this book, God's Good Earth, and it appeared in Christianity Today about 10 years ago. But in it, he describes growing up in India, and he and his friends as small children playing in the rice paddies, chasing frogs, and apparently in the process they knocked over some of the little dams that channeled the water, and the old man who was in charge of that area, whose rice paddies they were, came out. Tata is his name, and he says, he confronts the boys, he says, "What is this?" The biggest boy took the responsibility of answering for us all. "It's mud, Tata," he replied. "Whose mud is it?" the old man asked. "It's your mud, Tata. This is your field." Then the old man turned and looked at the nearest little channels across the dam. "What do you see there in that channel?" "That's water running over into the lower field." For the first time, Tata looked angry. "Come with me and I'll show you water." A few steps along the dam, he pointed to the next channel where clear water was running. "That's what water looks like," he said. Then we came back to our nearest channel and he said again, "Is that water?" We all hung our heads. "No, Tata, that's mud." The older boy had heard all this before and he didn't want to prolong the question and answer session, so he hurried on. "And the mud from your field is being carried away to the field below, and it will never come back again because mud always runs downhill, never up again. We're sorry, Tata, and we'll never do this again." Tata was not ready to stop his lesson as quickly as that, however. He went on to tell us that just one handful of mud would grow enough rice for one meal for one person, and it would do it twice every year for years and years into the future. "That mud flowing over the dam has given my family food since before I was born and before my grandfather was born. It would have given my grandchildren and their grandchildren food forever. Now it will never feed us again. When you see mud in the channels of water, you know that life is flowing away from the mountains." And then he goes on in this essay, and this next passage is especially poignant, realizing who Paul Brandy was and who his what his legacy is. And it is a reminder to us of how serious this business is. Because he goes on to say, I would gladly give up medicine tomorrow if by so doing I could have some influence on policy with regard to mud and soil. The world will die from a lack of pure water and soil long before it will die from a lack of antibiotics or surgical skill and knowledge. It'd be my hope that we can share that with our congregations, with our colleagues, and that medical missions will continue to have an important place in what we do, but so will creation care.
Can I just do a plug based on what you just read? If you haven't seen it, a movie that you need to watch just for passion and fun, not for reason, is the Milagro Bean Field War. It's a story of what happens when a peasant farmer up in New Mexico kicks over the water break that keeps the water out of his field and decides he's not going to put it back out again. And what he brings down on his community and what his community finds out in playing this through. It's somewhat of a mystical, there's a mystical element to the movie, which adds some lightness. But it is really a fun movie to watch.
Well, thank you, Scott. Thank you, Randy. Thanks in absentia to Steve for helping us think through these things, and to all of you for being here and making this a really rich discussion. We've had a great time. Let's think about continuing some of this online, at least for a little while, and maybe share some resources like Randy's just done with each other. And I'll try to work out some of the details of that in the coming days and send you a quick email and participate a little if you want to, and then we'll probably let it die after that and see whether there's other existing networks that we want to connect through rather than invent our own. But it's been wonderful spending time with you, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I did bring boxes and boxes of Creation Care magazine to share several issues with you, and they're stuck in Madison where I had them shipped and they missed the truck to come over. So the IV folks are going to be gracious and mail some of that stuff out to you in a little package.
Hey, let's thank Chad for the Bible study as well.
Oh, yeah.